Today is Sunday, January 29th, 2023. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Frank Barrios. My name is Tom Martin. This is part two of this oral history. Good morning, Frank. How are you today?
Good morning. And again, I thank you for doing this interview. Appreciate it.
You're very kind. Thank you for your kindness. Frank, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, you do.
Thank you very much. Frank, can you recount for me the first time you saw Grand Canyon?
I was very young. My parents visited the Grand Canyon several times, but always from the rim, from the south rim.
Okay.
And
do you remember how young or how old you were at the time?
Oh, the first time I saw it, I was probably 10 years old, somewhere in there.
Okay. So this would have been in the early 50s.
That's correct.
And as a 10-year-old, you were probably more interested in squirrels than anything else.
That's correct. But I also I mentioned to you that we did a lot of deer hunting and
yes,
with my cousins, and that would put me up to maybe 12 to 15 years old.
Okay.
And I would have hunted on the North Rim.
Okay.
And, of course, while we were there, I would have taken a trip to the North Rim also.
Okay. So you were aware as a young man, as a boy growing up, that the canyon was there. It was a big place, but it was part of, your Phoenix and your hunting and your schooling and your parents and the whole scene there.
That's correct.
Okay. When did you really fall into the Grand Canyon, get hooked to the Grand Canyon, shall we say?
Well, the first trip into the Grand Canyon occurred I believe 1961, it could be 62.
Okay.
I was taking a geology class at Phoenix College from Milford Benham. I always remember the professor.
Do you know how to spell his name?
Milford Benham would be B-E-N-H-A-M, I believe, Benham.
Thank you.
And he had a two-part class. The first semester, he would end the class with a trip down to Phantom Ranch.
Oh, wow.
And that would end the class. And then the second semester, he had a trip to Havasu.
Okay.
And that would end that class. So my first trip into the canyon was as a part 61, I believe. And in 1 year, semester one was Phantom Ranch, semester two was Havasu, as part of that geology class at Phoenix College.
Okay. So let's talk about your trip to Phantom. Was that at the end of the fall semester or at the, when, what, do you remember roughly what kind of time of year that was?
That would have been the end of the,
was it hot or was it kind of cold at the rim?
I can't remember.
Okay.
With you. I'm sure I can't remember any snow.
Okay.
In either case, both cases, we ended up reaching the trailheads and going down in, and I believe we spent the night on both cases in the canyon.
And were you?
And then would come up the next day.
Did you have a backpack? Were you packing in your gear there?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I remember. I stayed. I did a. Since that time, I did many Havasu trips and many Phantom Ranch trips.
Okay.
I do remember staying at Phantom Ranch. I believe. We stayed at the bunks. They have bunks at Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
Bunk beds. And that geology class to Phantom Ranch, we stayed inside. We did not backpack in. We stayed at the facility at Phantom Ranch.
That was a pretty good move on Milford's part to eliminate, you know, carrying in a whole bunch of stuff to spend a night and then pack it all back out again.
That's correct. But I believe at Havasu, if I remember right, we camped out, but he had mules take our backpacks down into the Havasu.
Okay.
And then they would take them out, so we made the trip without having to have backpacks.
Nice. Nice. What else? Do you remember anything about Benham, about the talks that he would give hiking down, hiking up?
I learned a lot about the geology of the canyon.
Okay.
But again, if you'll remember, I had mentioned earlier that I wanted to be a geologic engineer.
Yes.
And so this would fit right in, but of course engineering was calculus and a lot of pre-courses before you get into engineering.
Strengths of materials and all those.
All of that, but definitely, if I was going to be a geologic engineer, I wasn't going to pass up a one-year class on geology.
Mm. Nice. So.
But Ben explained everything, the canyon, the different layers, and it was part of his class.
Nice. And then was there some sort of a test on that? Or?
I believe there was.
Okay.
When we got back, if I remember right, he did give us a test. So it was a in-place class.
Really nice. And what was your overall take of the Grand Canyon at that time, hiking down?
I was fascinated. It was great. I truly enjoyed it. I didn't have the love I ended up with the Grand Canyon, but because I was a wilderness guy, Boy Scouts, hunting, I loved to be out in the woods, and this was part of that experience. But
nice.
There was no the love I would later have for the canyon came over time.
Okay. And then Havasu, did you go down to the big waterfalls down there?
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, that was all in the national park, or some of it was. The reservation hadn't been expanded, which would happen in 1975. That's the Havasu Reservation.
I didn't ask.
Okay.
All I did was went down to the Three Falls.
Follow Dr. Benham, okay.
I followed Dr. Benham explaining, and
nice.
I had no idea what, who owned what.
Okay, all right, very good. So you were in Phoenix College at the time.
Correct.
When did you graduate from Phoenix College?
I actually came back to get my degree, but it was 1963 when I was given the diploma.
Okay.
And I was short, just to give you a quick explanation, I was, at that time, Phoenix College was set up to get an engineering degree from U of A, not ASU. And so I found out when I decided to go to ASU that I had to take several, like calculus at ASU was three semesters. And at U of A was two semesters.
Okay.
So I had to take another semester of calculus at ASU.
Hmm.
Had I gone to U of A, I probably would have been able to graduate a little earlier from ASU.
Right. So they would have had different requirements then.
Right.
Okay.
And so I actually got my degree in 1963 from Phoenix College. But I, at the time I got that degree, I was also, I was attending ASU towards my engineering degree. And by that time, I believe I had changed to civil engineering.
Okay. All right. And then were you working during the summers? Because you'd mentioned you'd work for the Forest Service in,
right.
I believe, 61 for the summer. What do you remember any work that you did with maybe 62?
Well, when I went to ASU, one of the jobs I got, not right away, but later on, I was working at a liquor store in the shopping center right in Tempe, right next to ASU.
Okay.
And it was a great place, and they sold liquor. But by this time I would be 21 years old.
Okay.
I worked there all through the time I got my degree.
Okay.
It was Hayden Plaza Liquors is what it was called. And Hayden Plaza was on Scottsdale Road, just on the other side of the river.
Okay.
And I worked there for several years. It was a great job because it wasn't packed with people coming in, and I could do my homework there, and I was there by myself.
Nice.
Almost got robbed once, but it didn't.
Tell me about that.
A guy came in. It was a guy waiting in the car, and it looked very suspicious, and I told him, are you alone? And I said, well, the police officer comes by on a regular basis to check on me, and then he went back in the car and they took off. So. But I suspect one of the other guys, because it was a very lonely, the Hayden Plaza was not filled, and the liquor store was all by itself off in a corner. One of the other employees at the place was robbed one time.
Wow.
They came in and robbed the store. I came close to it, but never was robbed.
Thankfully, okay. But that sounds like a great college job where you can get paid and you can do your homework. And I can say it's fairly quiet. And that's good.
Yes.
Okay. And during that time, 62, 63, did you do any more backpacking or hiking or exploring anywhere, or was it just pretty much school-focused?
No, it was school-focused. Engineering wasn't... I would continue hunting.
Okay.
But engineering was tough. I had to put in long hours of studying. It was not easy getting an engineering degree.
Okay. Okay. So hard work.
A lot of it, yeah.
Yeah. When you graduated, was that in the spring of 63?
It was the second semester of 63. I had to take... I was going to ASU, but I looked up and I was short a couple of classes to get a degree from Phoenix College. So I went back and actually took a couple of classes that would then meet the requirement to get a degree from Phoenix College. I just figured I could finish up with just a couple of classes and then... from that point forward, I would concentrate on my engineering degree. So I believe it was the second semester of 63 that I got my degree.
Okay, and then you shifted over to ASU then?
Correct.
Okay. And then when did you graduate from ASU?
1966.
Okay. All right.
And one thing in between there is I got, I mentioned I'm not an A student, but my grades fell a little bit low, and I got drafted to Vietnam.
Okay.
And
What year was that?
I think 65, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And I was told I had to take a physical and be ready to leave on the same day, they said.
Okay.
And, of course, my mother was saying rosaries all over the place.
Oh,
and,
bless her.
I went in, and they ended up classifying me 1Y because of my eyesight. I had very bad eyes.
Okay.
And I didn't pass the eye test. 1Y said they would take me if there was a major war, but Vietnam wasn't considered a major war, so I didn't go. And I went back to school and graduated in 66.
Let's go back for a minute. When, as a child, did you or your parents notice you had trouble with your vision?
Oh, I wore glasses from probably 12 years old on.
Okay.
And they were very thick glasses, and I wore those glasses until, 20-some years ago, I did a cataract surgery.
Okay.
And that made all the difference in the world.
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay. All right.
And,
So because of your eyesight then, they put you in 1Y category. And you went back to ASU and graduated then in 68.
That's correct.
Okay.
66.
Sorry. 66, thank you. All right, got it. And then what happened?
Well, then I had to get a job.
Yes.
And I applied for several positions. I accepted the position with the Bureau of Reclamation.
Okay.
It was very low pay, but in those days I was looking at retirement.
Mm-hmm.
It was important to me, and I did not want to leave Phoenix. I'm a second generation. My mother was born here, and I was born here.
Okay.
So I was looking for a job that was local, and the Bureau had a planning office for the Central Arizona Project here in Phoenix. And I accepted their position. Even back then, it was very low pay. I said $5,000-something a year, which was very low. But they had a training program. They trained you for 1 year.
Oh, okay.
Before you had to go into one of the areas of the Bureau. But it was the planning office. This was before the Central Arizona Project was approved.
Can you tell us about the concept of the Central Arizona Project? Just what that plan was, what it intended to do when you were hired.
Well, it was the planning office was to do the planning for the project. Basically a canal from the Colorado River at the Parker, above Parker, behind Lake Havasu, all the way down to Phoenix, south to Casa Grande, and then south to Tucson.
Okay.
That was the plan, with several dams to be built as a part of the plan. So basically, we had a survey crews. We had drilling crews, we had hydrologists, we had engineers, planners. It was a fairly large office with a lot of people there that were putting together the plans for this, studying what was needed, and where the alignment of the canal would be and that sort of thing. And drilling crews would be drilling to make sure it was feasible to put a dam there. And before I came as a part of the plan at that time, we were going to build two dams in the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And Bridge Canyon and Marble Canyon dams.
Okay.
And looking back, it was a dumb idea, but at the time, I was a brand new engineer in there.
Mm-hmm.
Engineers like to build things, and basically the two dams in the Grand Canyon would have provided the power to the because from to take the water from Lake Havasu to central Arizona required a lot of power.
To pump that water and up to the higher country from the river in the low country.
That's correct. And you had to have cheap power to do it.
Okay.
And there's no cheaper power than hydroelectric power.
Okay.
So Marvel Canyon and Bridge Canyon.
I got some questions here. You're reminding me of a group, I think out of Chicago, called Hazra, that was sort of doing the early preliminary work on this. I believe that was in the 50s into the early 60s. Does that ring a bell?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
The thing that I did was part of, I remember sitting, the enemy of the Bureau was the Sierra Club and the Audubon Society.
Okay.
Those were the ones that, especially the Sierra Club, it launched a major battle against the Bureau.
Okay.
On the dams. And to be truthful with you, looking back at the time, I was a young engineer and was part of the planning, and it was my group against the Sierra Club, but it was a bad idea. These dams would have been in the center of the Grand Canyon. Mm. They would have built roads down in there, major destruction of everything that's in the Grand Canyon today.
Okay.
But right. At the time, I remember one ad that I saw in the New York newspaper. It was a picture of the Grand Canyon underwater, but of course that wasn't going to happen. It was
right.
You wouldn't even see the dams from the top of the rim. But they were going to build roads down in there and tunnels through the Grand Canyon. Marble Canyon was going to have a tunnel. It was a location below where Grand Canyon is today.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have ended up in Kanab Creek with a huge drop in elevation, which would have provided the power for the pumping of the canyon.
Okay. So hang on. I'm just going to kind of set this scene for 1966. As a new graduate, before you took the job with Reclamation, were you aware of you know, the whole concept of the CAP? Were you aware of the fact that this fight was going on? Because it really kind of erupted, it sounds like, in 66.
No, well, except no one thing. The greatest thing in the history of Arizona was the CAP.
Okay.
I remember growing up as a kid. There was an article almost every day about the water stealers in California.
Okay.
Who were stealing our water. They were. They were using our allotment of water because we couldn't build the CAP to take our water.
Okay.
And Barry Goldwater, Udall, it didn't matter you were Democrat or Republican, the most important issue in Arizona was the building of the CAP. Our future was at stake.
Okay.
Without the CAP, there wasn't enough water for Arizona to grow.
Okay.
It was very important. And California fought us at every turn because as long as we didn't have the CAP, they would use our allocation of water.
Okay.
So I was very aware of the CAP.
It was okay.
The most important project ever to be devised in Arizona.
This is very helpful. Cool.
And I think it didn't matter what party you were, Goldwater, Udall, whether you're Democrat or Republican, they were united in their support of the CAP.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to hear a tale. I heard at one of the historical society meetings about. I remember I attended it, and it was I don't remember his name now, but he was when Carl Hayden was had lost his mind. He was 90-some years old. He was in a diaper, but he was at one of the most powerful positions in Congress.
Okay.
And he had an aide who did all of the decisions, Carl. But nobody, and the CEP was coming up for a vote, whether the Congress would approve it. And according to this guy, the election was coming up, and it was Carl Hayden versus Evan Meekum for the seat. And Carl Hayden, it was the head of the Appropriations Committee, and it was going to come to before him to vote on whether the CAP should be appropriated and start construction of it.
Okay.
And both Republicans and Democrats, if anybody saw Carl Hayden, they would not vote for him. And Ev Meekum was a kook, but he was a very eloquent politician.
Okay.
And that if the two of them came together, that probably Carl would lose, and we would lose the appropriation for the CAP.
Mm.
So he told a story that they met at the podium at the Arizona Republic. And he said at that meeting was Barry Goldwater, the Udalls, Rhodes, and Pulliam. And I don't know if you remember back in that time period, Pulliam was very Republican. The Arizona Republic was a Republican paper.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And they all agreed that Carl Hayden had to win. Otherwise, we'd lose the CAP.
Oh, wow.
Barry Goldwater raised his hand and said, I'll get $50,000 donation to the Carl Hayden campaign. Barry Goldwater, a prominent Republican, getting money for a Democrat.
Mm.
And Pulliam said, Pulliam, the head of the Arizona Republic, said, I'll make certain that every article on Evan Meekum is in the back of the paper, and every article on Carl Hayden's in the front of the paper.
Okay.
And Udall said, we'll make certain that nobody ever sees Carl Hayden. We're going to keep him locked up in Washington, D.C., and so that nobody will ever see that he's not capable of leading.
Right.
And I think the last statement was that the guy who gave the paper said, I left Washington, D.C. with a briefcase full of money, and I don't have to tell you what that was all about, do I? And it was an interesting presentation he gave, but that will tell you a little bit of the importance of the CAP. It was the most important project in the history of Arizona, because without it, there was no growth in Arizona. And today we're seeing that in the, all of a sudden the Colorado River is in a drought, and Arizona's future is in doubt.
What's really wonderful about what you've just gone over, I did an oral history interview with now an older gentleman who in 1966 was a master's student in hydrology at the U of A. And
who was that?
A fellow named Gene Reitz. And Gene, I think he was in a PhD program at the U of A. Gene and a number of other people actually had their names in a advertisement sort of thing against the dams in the Grand Canyon. That component.
Oh, don't worry. They also opposed the CAP, by the way.
Okay. Well, they were certainly... That advertisement I'm talking about was in opposition to the dams. And that was... it was put in the back of the newspaper, just like you say. And the next day, he was called into the dean's office and told that he was not an appropriate candidate for the program he was in, and was being summarily dismissed And so he left Tucson and got his degree, PhD elsewhere, and had a wonderful career. But it was just interesting. What you've helped me with is to understand the resistance, the statewide bipartisan resistance against anyone who opposed the CAP, because I was kind of rocked back on my heels going, why would the dean do this? And you've really helped me understand that. So I'm very appreciative of that. It is wonderful to get two sides of the vision for me as a historian to understand that. It's very helpful.
But let me also tell you that once the construction started of the CAP, mm-hmm. there were a couple of professors at the University of Arizona in Tucson that opposed the CAP. They said, we don't want it.
Okay.
And they said, rather than spend all that money, let's leave the water on the Colorado River and use the water along the river and build up the cities of Bullhead City and all the Parker and all those Yuma, all the towns along the river. And there was a time that we actually, during the continuing work on the CAP, mm-hmm. that we actually said we were not going to go to Tucson with the CAP because of the opposition by these professors.
Okay.
And they had support from people in Tucson, but later they changed their mind and came in after construction was well along and said, we want the canal all the way to Tucson.
Okay.
And the canal was extended all the way to Tucson.
Okay.
But again, you not only had the fight on the dams, but you also had a couple of, I don't remember their names, that were leading the fight against the CAP to Tucson.
Okay.
Or against the whole CAP.
Got it.
But U of A, of course, is part of the history of Tucson versus Phoenix. Whatever Phoenix is for, Tucson is against.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But know that overall, if you go back, clear back to even, I don't know if you know this, but if you want to go before I was even born, mm-hmm. in the 1920s, we almost went to war over California over
yes.
the building of Parker Dam.
That's right.
And so the battle on water on the Colorado has a long history.
Yes, it does.
And people like Udall and Goldwater, their parents were involved in those battles.
Oh, interesting.
So so you have a CAP was the most important project probably in the history of Arizona. So, and the Bureau was given the job to do the planning for how are we going to do it, what dams are we going to build to get this project completed. And it was one of the largest projects in the United States history. It was in the billions to complete this project.
Frank, I'm going to kind of go off on a little tangent here because I do want to go back to 1966 as a new grad, you know, what you remember that those first few months in the training in the first year of training program you were in. But sort of we're typically cruising at 30,000 feet. Now we're going up to 100,000 feet to kind of get a bigger, longer view because now in 2023 we can look back and you've made a couple of comments that I find very fascinating. The CAP at the time was trying to get water to the desert so the desert could grow, so Phoenix and Tucson and Arizona could grow. And that was goal. It was a bipartisan journey. I mean, just trying to put this in perspective.
Correct.
And the growth in the southwestern United States with Colorado River water, someone had said somewhere, was the biggest migration in the history of our species is to the southwestern United States because there was water and land and job opportunities. And then now we realize that with drought and with the huge amount of growth, we've sort of outgrown what the river can provide.
That's correct. But keep in mind, we're seeing symptoms of it right now.
Okay.
The real damage will occur in the future.
Okay.
As people come in, right now, they're providing, there's a few cases Rio Verde, what's the other place? There's another one that's, there's a few places that that are experiencing actual cutoffs, but...
Got it. Where developments have been built, but they don't have the water to provide to the people who bought into those places.
For the future.
Yes.
Right now, you can pump, and you got water, but if you're on groundwater,
yep,
that'll be gone in the near future. When it's gone,
yes,
all of a sudden you've got a ghost town. I like to use the example of the mining towns. Mm-hmm. Jerome is a
okay.
good example.
Okay.
Jerome had you built this great big beautiful city on the hill.
Yep.
Why? Because of copper.
Yes.
The minute the copper was gone,
right,
the city was abandoned.
Yes.
That's the same example of water.
Okay.
While the water is there, you'll grow, it's beautiful, the weather is great. When the water is gone, how many of these communities are going to be ghost towns?
Right.
And let me give you an example of the towns that are in trouble.
Okay.
Kingman.
Okay.
Flagstaff.
Yep.
Prescott.
Yep.
Payson. All of these towns, major towns, that are not that have no river anywhere close by that are on groundwater,
okay,
are facing a disaster. Now we thought with the Colorado River that we wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing today.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, if you look at the history of the Colorado River, we based the allocation of water that was given to each of the states on the wet years when the
yes.
river was running even wet.
Okay.
So there is actually less water than we think we were allocated.
Okay.
But back when the CAP was authorized, there was a lot of water running in the river, and we thought we had found the solution to our problem.
Okay.
Until now.
Okay.
Now, some will tell you climate change is the cause of all this. Others will say nonsense. We'll have wet years again.
Okay.
So it depends on which hat you want to wear.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, if this continues, we're going to Phoenix, actually, the Phoenix area is not in too bad a shape because we have the Salt River here, the Salt River Project.
Okay.
But you go to Casa Grande,
yep,
you go to Tucson,
okay,
they have no other source other than groundwater and the Colorado River.
Okay.
They were very dependent on the Colorado River.
Yes.
The only two places that probably will last longer than others will be Yuma, because Yuma got a huge allocation of Colorado River water because they used it first to farm.
Ah.
And they got 1 million acre feet of Colorado River water, and actually their priority is over and above the CAP. So you could dry up the CAP completely and still have to deliver water to Yuma.
Interesting. Okay.
And then the other one was Phoenix, because we do have the Salt River Project, and we have a huge groundwater supply underneath us also. So it's a combination of a lot of groundwater, the Salt River, and we have high priority Colorado River water, but which we've been storing for years, by the way. The cities have, because they didn't need to take all of their allocation at once,
right,
they were putting that water underground and storing it, so they've
right.
got bank accounts of
mm-hmm.
water
right.
that they can draw from. So Phoenix area and Yuma are two of the areas that are in fairly good shape. But the rest of Arizona, it could be facing problems very soon. I don't know if you've seen recently, Douglas just created an active management area. Now, we haven't talked about the groundwater code, and that's a whole different story, and it's heavily dependent on the CAP.
Right.
So if you want me to get onto that now, I will, or do you want to wait till later?
I do want to wait till later, but I do want to, while we're still up here at this high, high level, I want to ask you, because you're so just familiar and grounded with this, and your entire life has been in Arizona dealing with water, looking to the future. There's kind of these different schools of thought. One is, and I can sort of think about Goldwater and Udall. I think we want to bring water to our state so we can grow. And at one point, the growth exceeds the supply, whether it's banked in the ground or whether it's coming in from other states up basin. Looking ahead, do you see an option to head towards sustainability versus the continued growth and more houses? And we were just down in Tucson, my wife and I, and we saw these huge new developments coming on, and we were just looking at each other going, where's the water going to be for this? It seems like when we have water, we want to grow. No one's looking at sustainability. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Well, one is, you've got to realize there is no more water in Arizona that's not owned by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Or groundwater. The surface water is all allocated. Somebody has that. The groundwater, the only place they put restrictions on the use of groundwater is in the active management areas and in the what they call irrigation non-expansion areas under the groundwater code. But that's only a small portion of Arizona. The rest of Arizona is pumped until it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the surface water, what little surface water there is in Arizona, is and Colorado River water, has already been allocated. Somebody owns that water.
Right.
If you want to sustain, you've got to take the water away from somebody who has it and move it to somewhere where they need it. And of course, that will declare World War III for the people who presently have that water supply.
Okay.
So where is the future? And now I'm getting into my opinion.
Yes, please. That's what I'm looking for, Frank.
Okay, and many people have different opinions, but
yes,
the only place we can go for water that's new water into Arizona is desalinization.
Okay.
To the ocean.
Okay.
And I think at some point we've got to build a desalinization plant in the ocean and use that water for the future of Arizona. That's where the sustainability can come from.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But there's some areas that even desalinized water, you can't get that to them because of their location. Example, Kingman, Flagstaff. Those are limited growth areas. Yet, if you go to the city councils, they're going to tell you their cities have great growth.
Right, 100-year potential of water, no problem. Let's grow. Yeah.
No problem, let's grow. But it's not true. You've got the reality of water in Arizona, and you've got the politics of development being the best thing that could happen to anybody.
Right.
And of course, developers will come in, they'll build, they'll leave, and then 10, 20 years from now, that development will be out of water.
Right.
And if you want to see what it's going to be like, just look at Rio Verde right now.
Okay.
You've got these beautiful homes, very expensive homes. They're out of water.
Mm.
And they're trying to sue. They got lawyers. They're trying to do everything. They're going to bring in a water company. It seems to be the answer. But they're going to be paying 10 times the cost that they're paying right now.
Oh, interesting.
When that water company comes in.
Mm.
Let me give you an example of one of up in New River. New River recently their water company went bust.
Okay.
And they're because of the groundwater situation, there was no more water left, and the water they were pumping had arsenic in it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Which is common in Arizona, sure.
Right. What they ended up doing, they made a deal with the Akchen Indians.
Okay.
Out, and the Akchen are south of Maricopa. They had a CAP supply of water, and they leased it to the New River people.
Okay.
And I believe Anthem, I'm not sure of this, I'll double check, but Anthem and New River and all those areas are on water they lease from the Akchen Indians.
Okay.
And that's Central Arizona Project water that is stored behind Lake Pleasant. And they have a pipeline from Lake Pleasant to these areas, and that's where they're getting their water.
Okay.
And, of course, if you live in New River, eventually the Indians will probably take their water back, and then their only future would lie in that they would be annexed by the city of Phoenix.
Okay. So at this, you know, 100,000-foot level here, and I really appreciate your taking the time to sort of divert into this and ponder this with me as I kind of ask these naive questions. But it does seem to indicate, looking forward, that there will continue to be a lack of water to serve the demand, and that's going to be litigious. It's going to be very difficult. Is the way if I see this correctly?
Just look at Jerome.
Okay.
What happens when the copper's gone?
Right. Well, it turns into a tourist town, and they try to, you know, cater to artists and the tourist population. But yeah, the whole economy of the place really changed.
And let me give you an example. Just recently, Wilcox, Arizona,
okay.
That area, Wilcox is a closed basin.
Yep.
Means all the water the groundwater seeps towards those big Wilcox Playa area.
Yes, correct.
Well, they've got a lot of big industrial agriculture that's come in there, and they're farming in the area.
Which means they're pumping like mad.
And they're pumping like mad, and the groundwater levels are dropping
Oh, interesting.
Week.
Okay.
And they put on the ballot for that area, if the people wanted to create an irrigation non-expansion area, which means they would allow the existing farms to continue, but they would not allow any new development to come in.
Okay.
Farming area. And farming is the biggest use of groundwater there is.
Okay.
Well, the people voted against it, which basically, as I see it, They're saying, we're going to continue to prosper until the water's gone, and then we'll leave. Wilcox will become a ghost town.
Right.
And but yet Douglas, which is not far from there,
okay,
voted to become an active management area, which means, and again, we haven't talked about the groundwater code, and that's
right.
That's regulating groundwater use. But most of these people in rural Arizona hate government regulation. They hate government.
Understood. Okay, understood.
And the choice is, do you pump until everything is gone?
Right.
Or do you bring in government regulators? I used to joke when I worked for the government, hi, I'm from the government, I'm here to help.
Right. And we all roll our eyes and go, uh-oh.
Uh-oh. But you know what? That is the only choice that these
right.
people have.
Right.
Do you allow the government to come in and regulate your groundwater use?
Right.
Or do you continue to allow unhinged use of your groundwater until it's all gone?
Nice. This is exactly the point I'm getting at. Are we looking at sustainability through regulation type things, or do we sort of go until it's gone and then become the hokum again? I think about Phoenix and the canals, look at the 1,000-year-old history of boom and bust, where there was water, there was growth, there were canals, and then there wasn't, and the indigenous peoples moved away because there was no water. Or so it would seem in that. I may be wrong on how that works, but we as a species, this isn't the first time we've run out of water somewhere.
No, it's not. But again, one of the salvations was always the Central Arizona Project.
Okay.
If we're wrong, and this drought is temporary,
mm-hmm.
and we will get the Colorado to run like it once did again.
Right.
Then, because the answer to our problem for years and years was always the Colorado River. And we never could get the money to build a project to take the water.
Okay.
But if you believe that this is temporary,
mm-hmm.
then the Central Arizona Project would save Central Arizona.
Okay.
Wouldn't save Kingman.
Right.
It's not going to save Flagstaff,
right.
Prescott,
mm-hmm.
or the Payson.
Right.
These areas are limited because of the water supply. Well, and even the mines that use a lot of water,
mm-hmm.
are there's so many games that have played. I don't know if you're aware of, like in Payson, the mines paid to divert water from the Little Colorado River over into the Verde River, and they paid for that so they could take water out of the Little Colorado River and use it in their mines down around Morenci and Clifton.
Oh, okay.
There's games like, if you had 2 hours, I could tell you of all the water games that are played based on the history. Now all of a sudden we're growing, and we unless we find one of the solutions is conservation, but it's not the solution. It's just and at one time we always thought when the cities start growing they would take over the farmland,
mm-hmm.
because the biggest use of water in Arizona is agriculture.
Right.
And agriculture can save a lot of water through drip irrigation, laser leveling. All of this can be salvation for save a lot of water. But again, the plan was as the cities grew, they would take over the farmland, and so that you would have no additional water use.
Okay.
But that's not happening because the developers, if you'll look, are going for the cheapest land they can buy, and that's desert land.
And so they're not taking the farmland, they're taking the desert land.
Because it's cheaper.
Yeah, got it.
And if you look out there, they're taking some farm, but very little. I think if you look and see, they're buying big chunks of desert land for development.
Okay.
And that means additional water use plus
yep.
continuing agricultural use.
Yes.
And each of these industries, development, mining, cities, agriculture, have their lobbyists.
Yes.
If you're going to cut people, go after the other guy. Leave me alone.
Right, right.
And we'll conserve. And the active management, again, that's going to take probably Bruce Babbitt passed the groundwater code. And in fact, I know I'm not going. I don't want to get into it, but I will tell you this: the Bureau of Reclamation, when we were ready, we had the money, and we were ready to go forward with the construction of the CAP. The Bureau came back and told Arizona, "We're not going to approve the CAP until you get your, you start conserving your groundwater."
Oh, interesting.
And was probably at the, there's nothing in writing that says this, but Bruce Babbitt, when he was governor, probably asked the Bureau to say that so he could pass the groundwater code.
Okay.
And the groundwater code regulates groundwater use and at the penalty of huge fines and jail.
Okay.
And also part of the groundwater code was irrigation, not expansion areas, where we would allow agriculture to continue, but no new agriculture would be allowed.
Mm, okay.
And active management area meant everybody had to conserve. Mines, cities, agriculture, everybody, golf courses, everybody had to conserve water with a goal to meet a certain goal.
That was 40 years ago or
that's
so.
That's right. 1980 was when the groundwater code was passed.
Okay.
But the word is that the reason the Bureau told all these industries, we're not going to build you the CAP unless you agree to Governor Babbitt's groundwater code, was probably at Babbitt's behest.
Okay.
Every one of those industries, not because they wanted to, but because they knew they had no future in Arizona without the CAP, agreed to the groundwater code.
Immediately
after those same people negotiated with the groundwater code, those same people turned around and sued to kill the groundwater code. There was over 40 lawsuits against the groundwater code right after it was passed, and many by the same people that had been there at the negotiation of the passage of the groundwater code.
Interesting. So did it fail then due to litigation? How'd that work out?
It passed.
Okay.
And they couldn't, because it was written in such a way that if you found any part of it illegal, that killed the entire groundwater code.
Okay.
And so there was enough people that realized that maybe the groundwater code was not such a bad deal. They didn't like being regulated by the government, but they also knew they weren't going to get the CAP if they didn't approve the groundwater code. And if the groundwater code went away, they would lose the CAP. But that didn't stop the mining industries and many agricultural industries from suing to kill the groundwater code.
Okay. Since we're here and we're at this level, then I wanted to ask you another question. It looks like possibly next week, and you may most likely know way more about this than I do. I think
Let me look at my schedule. Hold on. Okay, Tom. I've got now what we can do. I've got meetings starting Monday and Tuesday.
Oh, hang on a second, Frank. This interview is still going, and we're not rescheduling just yet. Sorry about that. I had one more question for you in the discussion we've been having. Next week, it sounds like reclamation, and this is all because, I've been thinking about, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. And that whole concept of, do we regulate or do we use it till it's gone? It sounds like the Bureau of Reclamation has asked the states to come up with a plan to deal with the shortage of water, and that hasn't worked yet. So it sounds like next week, reclamation is going to present shortage management, and
that's correct.
So what are your thoughts about that? I mean, it sounds like that's all we can do. Reclamation has to operate these dams, and that's their number one issue. There's not a lot of water right now, and there's a bunch of people that want water and seem to be operating as if they're going to get their water, and like you say, they don't care about anybody else. But in reality, that can't happen, because there's just not enough water now.
Well, know this. They're getting some water. People like to say they're doing it for God and country, but they're getting paid to leave water in the dams, like the Indians. The Gila River tribe is giving up some of its supply, and it's going to stay in the dam, but they're getting money for that from the feds.
Okay.
They don't like to talk about the money. They like to say they're doing it for God and country. But there's a lot of people that are reluctant to give up water to leave there because they would have to cut people off. Agriculture is in has got a there's priorities to this water. It's Colorado River water. The cities probably have the highest priority, and the Indians have a very high priority water also. Agriculture is the lowest priority, so they're going to get cut. And what the big problem with agriculture when they get cut is that when the CAP was passed, they built an entire distribution system to take CAP water.
Okay.
And then they got off the pump in places. And instead of pumping groundwater, they were taking Colorado River water.
Okay.
Well, now all of a sudden they're going to be cut off on this expensive canal they built. Well, now they got to get back on groundwater or they're going to continue to do business.
Right.
And digging a well is an expensive proposition.
Yep.
They're asking for more money to help them dig wells.
Okay.
But again, there's going to be grinding of teeth when the Bureau comes in and says, we're going to cut, because you haven't given up enough water, we're going to cut an additional amount of water from you.
Right.
But again, it will probably be based on priorities.
Okay.
I don't know what the Bureau is going to do, but I don't think they're going to go after the high priority, which is the cities.
Okay.
They're probably going to cut, my guess is, they've already cut them almost to zero, but they're going to be big cuts to agriculture. And then they would possibly to the Indians, but the Indians have a high priority because that's treaty water
right.
with the tribes.
That's right.
When they cut, they'll come in. I doubt it because the highest priority of water on the Colorado River in Arizona is the Yuma area.
Okay.
They get 1 million acre feet a year.
Right.
Probably my guess is, and I don't know this, I'm guessing, that they won't touch Yuma. Yuma would sue them and probably they would win.
Mm, okay.
But they're going to go after the CAP water.
Okay.
And because that's the lowest priority, that was the last one to use Colorado River
right,
water.
Right. Last in line.
First in time, first in use.
Right.
And that's kind of a way to, but again, if it were strictly surface water, that's an absolute, but it's not. It's federally controlled water that follows a priority, but the feds basically, the people that they have leases with people for the water, but if you will, I think it'd be fair to say that they own the water. So if the Bureau of Reclamation, the federal government, decides to cut you off because of the priority, and I don't doubt when they do, there'll probably be several lawsuits that be filed. I always say,
sure.
If I had a kid, I'd tell him to be a water lawyer because he's never out of work.
Okay.
So I'm guessing agriculture will be cut almost to zero. The Bureau will go after agriculture first.
Okay.
And they're not getting that much anyway. Right now, they've already been cut way down.
All right.
And let me give you an example in Imperial Irrigation District in California.
Okay.
When there's shortages of water in L.A., they go to the Imperial Irrigation District because same thing in California as in Arizona. The farmers have the higher priority use of Colorado River water than the cities.
Okay.
So when they fall short in Los Angeles and San Diego, which are under the Metropolitan Water District, which provides water. You saw the movie Chinatown?
Yes.
Well, that was the Metropolitan Water District.
You bet.
I think they killed people to get water to L.A.
Yeah.
And they use a lot of influence to build the the canal from the Colorado River. But anyway, their priority is behind. So what they, when they fall really short of water, they go to Imperial Irrigation District. They pay them more water than they would get from their farms. And then the farmers at Imperial don't farm that year, and they let their water go through the canal to Los Angeles and San Diego.
Right, right.
So, and they pay them. And right now, there's the feds are paying people not to farm so that they can keep the dams up. The Indians, I'm retired. I'm no longer in the center of all this, but I do know the Gila River has agreed to give up some of their water and leave it in the dam. And again, if the president of the Gila River tribe will tell you because of God and country, but I will tell you because he's getting money not to take the water.
Yeah, okay.
And so I don't know what the Bureau is going to do.
Okay.
But my guess is if there's any water still being delivered to farmers, that's where the cuts will come from. And they'll work their way on up to the cities.
Okay.
Depending on how much they need.
Okay.
But right now, it looks good. We've got a lot of snowpack in the Rockies, except that what most people don't realize, it's not just snowpack. It's how it melts.
Right.
If it's sublimation, which is it evaporates,
yep.
You get very little runoff.
Right.
If you get a condition where the snow is wet and melting, and you get a warm rain on top of that, every bit comes off into the dam.
Right.
So the fact that we got a big snow pack doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have full reservoirs. It just we wait and see what happens with the weather.
That's right.
So if we get a good runoff from this snowpack, then the cuts to the everybody will be less. If you don't, then the Bureau, and they haven't received what they need to keep the, because what they don't want to do is cut, with the Bureau, a big part of it is of course, they claim that they run the dam for water, but power is where the money comes from.
Right, right.
And so what they're looking at very tightly is if we can't generate power, there's a loss of billions of dollars to the whole power industry.
Mm-hmm.
And if the dams are so low they can't generate power, then the Bureau will step in and pull water away from people to make sure they have enough water to generate power.
Right. Okay, thank you. This has been very, very helpful to go up a little higher than normal for a diversion, if you will. A wonderful thank you so much for laying that out. This is very helpful. And next time I look forward to going to 1966 as a new graduate, starting your Bureau of Reclamation training.
That'd be great.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to add to this interview we've just done that I should have asked you but didn't? And you're thinking, oh, he didn't ask me about this, but.
It's the truth of everything I've said that I, but again, you got to know that I'm not in the middle of anything. I'm now retired. I'm 80 years old,
mm-hmm.
But at one time, I was in the center of all of this, but,
nice.
No longer. So,
well, that's why we're talking.
But when I talk about things that are occurring today, it's I'm guessing that based on knowledge that I know.
Totally understood. Yeah, no problems with that. Wonderful. Well, with that, this will conclude part two of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Frank Barrios. Today is Sunday, January 29th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Frank, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.